Hey, sister, this episode and interview is all about herbal medicine for perimenopause symptoms. You'll want to catch it to learn how plant medicine can help support you in perimenopause, herbs you can find in your backyard to help with symptoms, and where to start if you want to learn more about herbal medicine. Let's dive in. What's up, sister? Welcome back to the Period Whisperer podcast, the show helping perimenopause and menopause women de-stress your body and decode what it's saying to you so you can own your own health, energy, and weight loss again. If you're new, I'm so happy you're here. I'm Bria, I'm your host, a recovering people pleaser and hustle addict turned functional and holistic hormone specialist. Let's lean in and learn what your body is saying to you. Hey there, sister. Welcome to this episode of the Period Whisperer podcast, and it's a cool one. Although I'm a believer in miracles of Western medicine when needed, I deeply feel like it should be the last resort, since there is so much we can do to heal ourselves naturally through holistic practices that protect our hormones and function, and also to ensure we've done the work so that if we need pharmaceuticals, we've done the work first to have a solid foundation so that our body can receive them and use them and heal from them. We don't get something for nothing, right? Which is why I'm so excited to bring this interview to you with April Coburn, who is a clinical herbalist specializing in helping women navigate perimenopause. Kind of perfect for us, right? She also teaches classes in beginning and advanced herbal medicine making, as well as many other topics related to herbal medicine. Her passion is connecting people to plant medicine in a healthy and empowering way. I think you're going to love this interview where we talk about real and simple ways you can use herbs to help with your perimenopause symptoms. And she even shares herbs you can find in your own backyard. I love it. All right, let's dive in. Well, hey there, sister. Welcome to this episode of the Period Whisperer podcast. And I'm so excited to welcome April here. Welcome, April. We're excited to have you.
Hi. Thanks for having me, Bria.
Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about you? I've been looking forward to this interview for a while. We were talking before we recorded about how long it took to book. So I'm really excited to have you here. This is a topic that I'm very, very interested in myself, and I know from my clients is, you know, absolutely top of mind and growing. But can you tell us a bit about you and how you even came to be an herbalist and maybe even your philosophy around plant medicine?
Yeah, sure. So I am a clinical herbalist. I see clients one-on-one to help them meet their wellness goals. And part of that process is finding the herbs that are best suited for them, their particular constitution, what they're going through at the moment, and what their goals are. Mm-hmm. And then I take that information and create custom herbal formulas for people. It could be teas or tinctures or some other form. And usually it also includes like lifestyle advice, you know, may include some supplement recommendations as well. But the herbs are definitely the centerpiece of what I do. How did I become an herbalist? It's sort of a long and winding path. I started.
I love these. I love long and winding paths.
Yeah. I didn't grow up, you know, with a connection to plant medicine at all. My family was very much, you know, pharmaceuticals and doctor's visits and stuff like that. And so much so that I had no real, concept in my mind that plants could be used as medicine. So eventually in my 20s, I came to work at a health food store and eventually became the buyer of the herb and spice department. And I realized that the plants, you know, the herbs that people were coming in and paying money for, what we grew up calling weeds, right? And they were bad plants and we were, you know, trying to eradicate them. And it kind of blew my mind that these plants not only weren't bad, but they were healers. And they were very, very good for us. So I just dived into that. I wanted to learn more, started studying herbalism, really took off down that path. But I didn't become a clinical herbalist till many, many years later because I ended up having kids and being a stay-at-home mom. And that side, you know, sidetracked me for a while. now my kids are older and I can put more time and energy into it. Yeah. But I never stopped learning along the way and using them for myself, my family.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. Obviously. So then when you say you use them for your family, is that sort of your initial journey with your kids when they need things? I know we're going to get into this, but no, I'm not going to ask yet. Sorry. Go ahead. You use them for your kids. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I can't imagine raising kids without having the plant medicine, because it's just so wonderful to have not only that knowledge, but that peace of mind that it gives you. That, yeah, we do see the doctor when there's serious things going on, but for most things, for, you know, the common cold or bruises, you know, little things, we can handle them ourselves, usually with plants that are growing right outside of our door, you know, that most people call weeds. So yeah, my kids grew up with it.
That's so cool. When we say, like, so when you think weeds, or when I think weeds, when I hear you say that, I immediately think dandelions for sure. Mm-hmm. What other, like, are there other weeds that come to mind that we would know that are powerful herbs when it comes to medicine? Or yeah.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, dandelions are sort of like, everybody knows what dandelions are, right?
Yeah.
But you know, there's lots of weeds that most people have growing right in their backyards that are amazing medicine. You know, just to name a few, plantain, you know, that flat, you know, round leaf that is such a nuisance to gardeners. That's amazing medicine. This is Callie. She's
cat visitor.
She's going to make an appearance.
Yeah.
chickweed. What else? Let's see, burdock. There's lots of weeds that we use all the time in herbal medicine.
And so when we're, you know, when we're talking about herbal medicine, obviously you're talking about like herbs and plants and things, but are these things, when you say they're in our backyard, like, are these things that we can go and pick and use ourselves, or?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 As long as you don't spray chemicals on your yard, right?
Yeah.
They're there for free. They're growing there right in your backyard for free. And that's when I teach herbal medicine. That's one of the first classes we do, is what are the weeds growing right outside your door that you can get to know now? You don't even have to go out and buy. They're right here. As long as you can identify them, you know, and know what to do with them, you've got medicine.
That's so cool. That's amazing. I'm excited now to take one of your classes.
Yeah.
So obviously we're here on the Period Whisperer podcast. You know, I center everything in this podcast really around helping women in the perimenopause and menopause years, like in these years of shifting hormones. You know, with your clients that are, you know, in this range, like, what do you see happening in perimenopause that herbal remedies can help with?
So in herbal medicine, we like to gear everything toward the individual. Mm-hmm. So there are plants that are generally good across the board for most people for certain symptoms or just for perimenopause in general. But as you, I'm sure you're aware through your own, work in this field, that everybody has a different experience, right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, some women may have hot flashes. Some women may never experience a hot flash. You know, we're all so unique. We all have different makeups. We have different health histories. We have different things going on in our lives. And we all present differently when we're going through perimenopause. And even at different stages, right? Yeah. What we experience in the beginning is different from what we experience as we get closer to that moment of menopause.
Yeah.
And so when I work one-on-one with people, I'm really trying to suss out what's going on with them, what do they need help with, and, you know, take a more individualized approach.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, there's herbs that show up again and again for people very often, because they're just really effective for certain things. So
can we talk about some of the, like, I know I love following you on Instagram, so I'll make sure to pop that Instagram in the show notes here, because April offers some really great tips specific to this time in our life. But you know, when we're thinking about some of the most common symptoms, you know, of hormone imbalance and these shifting hormones, I know you talk a lot about, like, stress obviously being part of that culprit. So we recognize that that's a big driver in what throws off the hormones for sure.
Right.
But
yeah.
When we let's get maybe we can get specific about some symptoms and some things that you see that could be beneficial for people to better understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah. Right. So stress is a big piece, and I know I've heard you talk about it too. Like bringing cortisol levels down is so critical. Our adrenals take over so much of the work of hormone production as our ovaries ramp down. So making sure our adrenals are not overtaxed. Mm-hmm. We're not constantly in fight or flight mode. We're not constantly feeling stress and pumping out the cortisol. So I use a lot of a category of herbs called nervines. Nervines are herbs that work on the nervous system. They help us to become more resilient over time. They help us to calm down that nervous system stress response. Some of them are sedatives, so we use those more at night if people are having trouble sleeping. But there's a lot that aren't sedative that we can use during the day just to help, you know, keep that level of calm and not get ramped up all the time. And so the beautiful thing about nervines is they can help in the moment, but if we take them every day for a period of, you know, a few weeks to a few months, they have an effect over time that is even more substantial. So they help us to really lower our base stress level across the board. Yeah. And just have less of a stress response to just average stressors in our life.
Yeah. Overall. And how, I find this so fascinating. So how does it actually work? I know you talked about maybe I'll get too geeky on this for anyone listening, but like you have the plant in your yard, or maybe, you know, you get the plant, and for you as the herbalist, like you pick the plant and then what happens?
Well, it really depends on the plant and what you're trying to do with it. So, you know, we can make a tea with a lot of plants, and a lot of the nervine plants work really beautiful as teas because they release their medicine into water very easily.
Okay.
And a lot of them taste really good. Most people don't mind the taste of it, so they don't mind drinking them as tea. So some of them don't have much of a taste. Like there's an herb called skullcap that we use a lot. It's in a mint family, but unlike other mint family plants, it doesn't have much of a fragrance or a taste, which is good because it makes a good base for a formula. And then we can bring in good tasting herbs around that. But you're still getting the skullcap medicine, which is calming down that stress response, increase our resilience over time. And if we use bigger doses, it can even help us sleep at night.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of them are really great as teas. We can use alcohol and extract the properties into alcohol and make a tincture. Mm-hmm. I usually do that with herbs that don't taste very well.
Right.
And people don't want to drink them as tea so that they can just take it and be done with it.
Yeah.
But there's some herbs that also yield their properties to alcohol more than water. So we'll use them as tinctures too. Some herbs you can just eat. There's plants, you know, weeds in the backyard that make really great tonic medicine, and you can add them to your salads or stir fries, things like that. Dandelion leaf is an example of that. So it depends on the herb, depends on what you're using it for, and how much medicine making experience you have.
Right, I mean, can anyone, I mean, obviously you run courses on this, so can anyone learn this stuff if they take a course and you know, and then they can start doing these things in their own home?
Absolutely. Yeah. Herbal medicine is people's medicine. It's the oldest form of medicine on the planet. It's still the most universal form of medicine on the planet. There's not a culture in the world that doesn't have an herbal medicine tradition. Now, here in the West, we've kind of gotten away from our tradition because we're very industrialized, right?
Yeah.
But every single person, if you go back just two or three generations, if we could meet all of those people, we would find an ancestor who knew how to work with the plant medicine because that was all that was available.
Right.
So yes, very accessible. And now it's easier to learn about it than it was even 20 years ago, because there's so many teachers, there's so many online courses and resources. Anyone can do it. Yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating. That's so fascinating. And I know, obviously, you know, I'm pushing on this a little because I'm so interested. And if it's not an okay space, let's call that out. But if we're, you know, if we are trying to get more specific, even though we know it is a very bio-individual thing, like we always hear one person's, you know, one person's poison can be another person's magic, right? But when we're thinking about, you know, you've talked a little bit about something that can help with sleep, when we're talking about things like lowering cortisol, and we're talking about things like estrogen dominance or maybe even digestive issues, are there some more generalist herbs that someone could look out for?
Yeah. So if you're talking about estrogen dominance, mm-hmm. for example, a lot of times in those early stages in perimenopause, when hormones are really fluctuating wildly, you know, and our estrogen can go up and start wreaking a little bit of havoc yeah. on our lives. the common herb rosemary, right, that everyone cooks with,
yeah.
that people often grow in their gardens, right? Rosemary is an herb that helps clear excess estrogen from our system. So we also want to make sure we're doing things like taking care of our liver, taking right. care of our microbiome, because that's how our body processes out excess right. hormones. But, you know, adding rosemary into our food or mm-hmm. making rosemary tea, very simple, anyone can do it. And that can give our body a little bit of extra help clearing that excess estrogen.
Just like, I love that you said that though, because you're right. It's like, it's great to have help, but if the system isn't fine, the system isn't able to do its job, then the help is kind of wasted, isn't it?
Yeah.
So when you're making rosemary tea, like I have 3 rosemary bushes right out in my front yard. So it's so fascinating to hear this, but do you just take the little green leaves off of it and steep them in water?
Yeah. I mean, I usually, if I'm harvesting rosemary, I'll usually harvest the end of the sprigs, like okay. the first 2 or 3 inches where the stem is still very pliable. It's not real woody yet.
Okay.
I'll just go ahead and cut the ends off. And then you don't need to pick every individual leaf off. You could just put it on your cutting board and chop it up coarsely.
Okay.
I like to, when I'm making tea, I like to put the herbs loose in a container, like a jar or something. I don't like to confine them into a tea ball or a tea bag.
Okay.
I like to put them in loose so they can move around in the water and really, mm-hmm. you know, get in there and release their properties. And then also you need to make a good long steeped tea if you're using tea medicinally. Most people are used to making green or black tea, where they just leave it in for a very, very short period of time. Yeah. For medicinal tea, you need to let it, you know, 10, 15, 20 minutes, give it a good long steep before you strain it out.
Ooh, that's a great tip. I had mm-hmm. no idea. Okay. So that's really good, rosemary, for helping with metabolizing estrogen in the body or helping mm-hmm. support that piece. And you mentioned skullcap. I mean, is that for sleep?
Yeah, skullcap. Yeah. It depends on, skullcap is a little bit of a sedative, but it's mm-hmm. not a super strong sedative. So you can take it during the day at lower doses. Mm-hmm. And that way it works more of like a nervous system tonic to help keep our stress level down. Right. And then if you take higher dose at night, it can help you sleep as well. It's not as sedative as some other herbs that we would use just at night.
Just for night and sleeping.
Yeah.
And what are some herbs that you would recommend at night for people who are really struggling with staying asleep? Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because of liver congestion, maybe it's because of blood sugar levels, you know, but sometimes it's like, even when we're doing the work in the day, I don't know about you, but I have definitely seen in myself, I've seen it in my children, I've seen it in my clients, where there's still that habit that lives on sometimes, that just natural habit to wake up and trying to get back to sleep can be so challenging for women.
Right. And sometimes the herbs can come in and give us a little bit of help while we're working on the foundational pieces, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, in looking at it as an individual approach, we look at what's going on. Why can't somebody fall asleep? Is it because they're in their head thinking, mm-hmm. going over their to-do list, or do they have anxiety and that's keeping them awake? Do they have trouble relaxing? Are they holding tension in their body and can't relax mm-hmm. at night? Or, you know, if you're, you know, later in the perimenopause stages, are they having night sweats and overheating, and that's waking them up? So there's, you know, finding out, you know, the reasons why, and then picking the herbs that, you know, are most likely to help with that. So we have a couple beautiful plants. We have an herb called passion flower, which is a vine that has a crazy beautiful flower on it. It's amazing. It's very easy to grow in your garden. And this herb is very sedative. We usually only use it at night unless we're using very, very small doses during the day. But what's amazing about passion flower is it's very helpful to calm down our mind. So for people who are awake because they're spinning their wheels or going over all the things, you know, it just helps calm down that response so that we can. I like to do other things too, like, you know, tell people to do a brain dump before bed, you know, let's your mind know we've got it written down. We don't need to ruminate over it, right? But then the passion flower can help calm down that mind as well.
I like that. It really is a holistic approach, isn't it? You know, it's like, let's look at all the ways that we can improve on this piece and use the herb as that helper.
Yeah. Yeah. I like to remind people, you know, the herbs are here to help us, but they don't like doing all the work. They like to be more of like, okay, our partners in this, right? Yeah. And so if we show them, okay, I am working on it. I am working on my foundations. I'm working on my mental health and all these things, but I could use your help too. They're more effective that way.
I love that you say that. I think that's a really important piece to highlight because, you know, no one thing should be doing all the heavy lifting. I think ultimately, even if, like you were saying earlier with the rosemary, it's like, it's not just one thing that fixes everything in our body. It's so if we're doing the foundational work to then, you know, we're meeting it halfway there. And I think at the very least, we're improving and creating a foundation that is probably more receptive to have a better experience using these herbs or using pharmaceuticals if that's what you end up needing to use down the road. So it's like doing our part in it, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. So just like, you know, if you're using pharmaceuticals, they may help you, but they're not going to fix the underlying problem. Same thing with herbs. They're very likely to help, but we have to work on, you know, the reason for the imbalance in the first place. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that. That's amazing. I think we should say that four times and highlight it. Yeah. Okay, this is amazing. Passion flower, that's a really good one. You're saying that can help with sleep, with sort of the calming down and falling asleep at night.
Or if people wake up in the middle of the night and they can't get back to sleep because they're spinning their wheels. Yeah.
It can be consumed then as well. And is it April, like, you know, so obviously the idea of growing passion flower in my garden and like harvesting it myself and making this beautiful tea sounds wonderful. But when we think about the busy lifestyle, like, can we buy these teas in the store? And is it as effective? Are there certain things we should look for? Or is it really best to be working, you know, with like a very fresh herb that, you know, we're, you know, buying from someone who makes it?
Right. Yeah, this is a really great question. So one of the things that I try to get across in my medicine making classes for people who are just starting to learn how to make their own medicine is that anytime you can grow a plant and harvest it yourself, dry it or make for tea or, you know, make your own medicine with it, the quality is going to be so much better than if you were to go to a store and buy the dried herbs. And the reason is you have no idea how long it's been since those herbs were harvested. They lose their vitality over time, right? And you don't know really the condition. So a lot here in the United States, a lot of the herbs that we would buy are harvested halfway around the world. They might have been dried in a barn. You know, they might have been stored in three or four warehouses by the time they get here. And like I said, who knows how long they've been sitting there. That's not to say that they don't work. They absolutely do work. But if anything that you grow, harvest yourself and use is going to be much higher quality. And likewise, if you don't grow your own, if you find a local, you know, herb farmer in your area to buy from, that's the second best.
Mm.
So there's a lot more herb farms now than there used to be 20 years ago. And it's usually not that hard to find one, even if you have to get it shipped to you.
Yeah. I'm totally going to Google local herb farmer when we get off this interview. Yeah. I'm so curious because I live in the desert. I live in Arizona. So things aren't the same growing. You know, we have sun all year long, which is really wonderful, but, you know, we don't have even the same grass and we shouldn't mm-hmm. in some areas. So it's, you know, I think that kind of leads me and you're in the winter. And I know like I have a lot of people that live in parts of the world that have dead of winter here that listen. And so growing outside isn't always possible. Like, is it possible to do our herb growing inside?
Some herbs can be grown inside. Like a lot of the culinary herbs can be grown inside. It's sometimes a little tricky to overwinter them. My house I live in a very old house. It's over 150 years old with big stone walls. So I don't have a lot of light in my house. So I don't really try that much. But during the growing season, I'm in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And, you know, our growing season starts in April mm-hmm. and we have a good 8 months and there's a lot we can grow and harvest. And I do a lot of drying and then store my herbs in glass jars and use them all winter long.
Oh.
So even without being able to grow them all year, I can still use my own medicine all year.
Yeah. Okay. So as a woman, I mean, obviously you probably grow quite an array of herbs since this is what you do and how you help people. But as a woman who I assume is in this midlife age box with me, you have kids. So I think we're probably right there together. You know, if you were going to recommend that someone start growing some herbs that's in our, you know, yeah, in our age box, in this perimenopause range, what would be like, is there a starter kit suggestion?
I mean, there's a lot of herbs that are easier to grow than others. Some herbs are a little tricky. They're a little finicky about where they grow and what they like and take a long time to germinate, things like that. But there's some that are super easy. So one that is super easy to get started with is calendula. Really easy to find the seeds. And very similar to marigold in that you can grow them almost anywhere in your garden. They have beautiful orange flowers. And it's the flowers mm-hmm. that we use as medicine.
Right.
So just like marigolds, if we pick the flowers and continue to pick the flowers, they'll keep making more flowers.
Right.
And you can have a supply of medicine all season long.
So fascinating. And what is calendula good for?
So calendula is one of the herbs that we use a lot topically.
Okay.
So it's really great for skin, moisturizing and healing the skin.
Yeah.
So we use it a lot for rashes and stuff like that. But specifically for women in menopause, it makes a really beautiful vaginal cream.
Oh, really?
So if women are having issues with vaginal dryness or irritation, things like that, they can make an infused oil mm-hmm. with calendula or turn it into a cream and use it. One of my earlier teachers, she liked to talk about calendula as an herb to use in places where the sun don't shine.
Uh-huh.
And that always uh-huh. stuck me because it's beautiful little orange flower. It looks like a little sun. And I feel like, okay, we're using it for like rashes under our arms, rashes mm-hmm. under our breasts, you know, and then, you know, vaginal dryness. These are all places where, you know, the sun doesn't shine and
or the sun don't shine.
Irritated. I like it.
Yeah. I love that. That's amazing. I find this so interesting. I'm really excited to learn more even after we get off this call, but I can hear my clients saying to me like, okay, well, what do I do? You know, like, so if they want to learn more about, and we'll talk about learning more from you, but if like, here I am, if I know I want to lean more into herbal medicine and, you know, I work with supplements for sure. And like you, I really, you know, understanding where an issue is coming from and the root of the issue is the most important before we go out and just start spending a lot of money on things that may or may not apply where we're going for. But, you know, it is the best thing for someone who is suffering to come to a practitioner like yourself or, you know, and before they go out and take anything. in terms of, you know, because I'm thinking of obviously a lot of the things that come up are, we talked a bit about sleep, we talked about estrogen dominance, like frequent urination, hair loss, brain fog, things like that, you know, that seem to come to the table quite a lot for women. Is it always the case that we should speak with someone first? Or, you know, again, are there kind of some other general things that we can start with if we want to begin to explore in baby steps?
Yeah. So if somebody is really struggling and confused and doesn't know where to begin and doesn't want to spend the time trying to figure it out for themselves, I think working with somebody one-on-one is a really great way to go, because they can just bring their, you know, all of their symptom picture, their, you know, everything they're struggling with to the table. Somebody can look at it and put together a plan for them that's likely to help. Mm-hmm. If somebody is interested in trying to do things on their own, absolutely. There's a lot they can do. We talked about foundations already. I always like to tell people, this is always where you should start. You should start by looking at your stress level, looking at your sleep quantity and quality, looking at your diet, making sure you're eating enough protein, and moving your body, but not overdoing it, right? Mm-hmm. Because if our stress level is super high, we don't want to add more, you know? And I've heard you talk about that too. It's super important.
You're talking my language. Yeah. It can be tough, right? You know, because I think it's like, well, move, but don't move too much. Eat, but don't eat too much. Like it's, I understand where the confusion comes. And at the same time, we're doing 100 other things. So I can understand where the frustration comes for so many women. You know, that was how I even got into this, was feeling a little like confused about the mixed messaging around it. But, you know, I think I love that. That foundational piece is so important. We do have foundational health pillars that need to be honored above all else.
Yeah. And I think another critical thing, and that might help with the confusion, is that a lot of times we're not listening to our bodies, right? We get to this point in our life and usually we're running at full speed. We have kids, we have a job, we have the house to manage. You know, some of us have aging parents. We have so much on our plates. Yeah. We're used to putting ourselves last. We're used to taking care of everybody else's needs and always saying yes to everything. And we're not in tune with our bodies anymore, right? And if we could just slow down, just take some time, take some breaths, tune into our body, tune into what our body is telling us, right? Is going on another run, you know, going to overtax us? Mm-hmm. Or have been sitting around, you know, in front of a computer all day and our bodies want to move? You know, our bodies are so wise and they're constantly talking to us. So that can take a lot of the guesswork out of it.
Yeah, you're right. It's such an important message, and one like I think we'd work really hard to try to avoid. You know, that stillness, that sitting in stillness to hear what's coming up. Often we don't want to hear what's coming up, or you know, we don't feel like even we have time. I think I saw a meme the other day that said you should sit every day for meditation in 20 minutes, and if you're too busy to do that, you should sit for an hour.
Right.
But you're right. That linking of how we're like, of what's going on to how we're actually feeling in our body is so valuable, because otherwise we often really override it with like, I'm tired, I'm going to caffeinate, you know, I'm feeling yucky, I'm going to push harder, as opposed to maybe like actually giving and meeting the need of the body.
Right. Yeah. And perimenopause is a time to stop putting yourself last, right? Because up until this point in our lives, our constant supply of estrogen had our backs, right? It did so much for us in so many different parts of the body.
Yeah.
And as that estrogen starts to decline, any kind of lack of self-care is going to start showing up as symptoms. So it's really a time to put ourselves first, you know, put on our own gas mask, or oxygen mask, so to speak, so that we, you know, we can't be there for the other people in our life if we aren't okay ourselves.
Yeah. I love having this conversation with you because it's beautiful to hear it in someone else's words. But what you said there about estrogen has been there to have our backs. And the way I had always looked at it is like, I mean, it's been there to make sure we reproduce and keep the world going. But one way or another, you know, so that's probably a kinder way of looking at it, that it's been there to support us, not override our own things. But so thank you for that. That's a beautiful perspective. But one way or another, you're right. Like, this is our time for our second spring. And it is the universe's time to say, like, hey, it's time for you to focus on you, to honor, the integrity of what's there, and to call on the help of others since you've done your part.
Absolutely. Yeah. Really beautiful. Yeah.
What do you love to take day to day for your general health and support in your herbs? Do you have like an herb routine?
Oh, for myself personally?
Yeah.
Where I'm at on my perimenopausal journey, right? I am still very much in the wild fluctuation stage.
Mm-hmm. The early stages.
Yeah. So I'm approaching my 50th birthday and I'm still having regular periods. My periods have actually gotten closer together.
Yeah.
Which normal. Is fun.
Super fun, right?
Yeah.
You're like, oh great. Not only do I not know when it's coming, but it's coming more often.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I tend to have heavy periods because I have some uterine fibroids, mm-hmm. which is not unusual for women in our age group.
Yeah.
And they're not at a place right now where, you know, surgery is needed. So just, you know, managing them myself. Mm-hmm. And so I have an herb routine that I use when I'm menstruating that helps to keep my blood from my blood flow down. So I have an herb tea, an herbal tea formula that I drink to keep my periods from becoming too heavy. Mm-hmm. And then during the rest of my cycle, I have a formula that I have for myself that helps to manage that estrogen dominance piece.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Which also supports it all along. Oh, I love that. So there's lots we can do, it sounds like, as women in this age, right? It's not just for relief, but for prevention, for maintenance, like the whole shebang, we'll call it, all the way along.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I'm expecting to have to change my routine in the next couple of years as things start to change for me. Yeah.
And again, that's just, that really speaks to that. Like, as we learn to slow down and pay attention to ourselves, then that ebb and flow of the changes becomes a lot easier. And then we're not, you know, 10 steps behind. We're kind of working with it and on it to stay on top of it before things get too messy.
Right. Yeah. If you can know what to, not necessarily what to expect, because we don't know how we're individually going to experience things, but if we can know what is normal to experience, mm-hmm. then I think it can be a little bit easier. I just got done teaching a 5-week class called the Perimenopause Crash Course, where we talked mm-hmm. about, you know, everything that you can experience, what's normal. Doesn't mean you will experience it all. And then what you can do to help smooth out that transition. And some of the biggest feedback I got from that was women saying, you know, it just is such a relief just to know that everything I'm experiencing is normal.
Yeah.
You know, and I think about that, like, we don't talk about it enough. This is why your podcast is so important. And, you know, other people are doing this work because it needs to be talked about more. Women need to know that it's a normal experience. What they're experiencing is normal. You know, there are things you can do to help. Yeah.
And of course, what's common but not normal, you know, so that we can recognize that difference. And you're right. It can feel like a very lonely time. I mean, if you think about it, especially if you're in a hetero relationship, I mean, nobody gets it around you. I mean, your tight-knit little ecosystem of a family, like, you know, if as a woman, if you're in a hetero relationship, your husband's not going to get it. Your kids are not going to get it. Your mom can't remember it. So, you know, maybe you have a sister, but again, as you say, everything presents differently. And, you know, and even in our friendships. So, you know, even just having it be a conversation that's not just, oh, my hormones, but more like, hey, this is what I'm going through. You know, how are you feeling? I think is such a beautiful part of what helps us normalize and have this conversation more openly.
Right. Yeah. And I think you brought up a really good point in that it is starting to be talked about more publicly, but there's mm-hmm. usually this piece of like, I have to go through this.
It is what it is. Yeah.
But there's also this other way of looking at it, that it can be really empowering. Mm-hmm. It can be really freeing, right? Because yes. you're going through this transitional period. And what it's asking you to do is put yourself first.
Yes.
It's asking you to stop putting off taking care of yourself. And that can be hard for a lot of us. Yes. But once we learn how to do that, mm-hmm. then it can be freeing. It can be yes. empowering. And then when we get to the other side, oh my goodness. Yeah. You know, there's so much, there's a whole nother stage of our life waiting for us.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I know we get to this and we're like, oh, I'm getting older, but it's like, come on, if you're in your 40s, you know, we know women live longer than men. Like we've got another 40 plus years to go. Like that's a lifetime to thrive and accomplish things. So I love that you said that, because I really think that is the lens that we want to look at this, is it's the universe's time to tap us on our shoulder and be like, hey, now, okay, it's time. And yes, it's uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable to prioritize ourselves when we haven't, but also because often we don't even know what makes us happy. Often we mm-hmm. don't even know. And that's a hard conversation to have with ourselves. Like, what do I like? What don't I like? I can't remember. I don't just love watching my kids' sports games all the time.
Right. You
know, like, what are the things that bring me joy? Like, we make the most of where we're at. But I love the work you do, April. It's so beautiful. And you've given us so much. You've given us so much today, but especially just, I think I feel very inspired to learn more in this area and empowered to work on that self-healing, and that there's tools out there. So thank you so much. I really appreciate you.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So what is the best way? And of course, I'll put everything in the show notes, but what is the best way for women who are listening, who want to learn more about this and connect more with you?
So you can go to my website, nettlejuice.com. Everything is there. Yep.
Yeah.
And right on the landing page, there's a button to subscribe to my newsletter. So on my newsletter, that's where I let everybody know about classes coming up, things that I'm offering. And if you subscribe, you get a free ebook on herbs for sleep. So we talked about a couple of them today, but I talk about a whole lot more in the ebook.
Oh, I love that. You know what? I'm going to share this right now with my Midlife Mojo crew, because I know sleep is, it's one of those things, right? That is not, it's like trying to hold sand really tightly in your hands. It's like the more you time to try to control your sleep, the less it gets there.
So frustrating.
So I'm so excited. I'm going to go subscribe now. So I'll pop all of that in the show notes here, but I'm really grateful for this conversation. Thank you so much for all your knowledge and the work you're doing, how you're helping women. And I think we're going to have to do this again sometime.
That'd be awesome.
Awesome. All right, sisters, you now know so much more. If you were like me and in the dark, you know so much more about how herbal medicine can help you, where to go for help. Reach out to April, check out her website and sign up for that newsletter and follow her on Instagram. She's got some really great stuff there. We will, I hope you go out, be more in your life and not just less on a scale. And we'll catch you next time.
Thank you so much for joining me on the Period Whisperer podcast. If you liked this episode, take 30 seconds right now to write a review on iTunes and then reach out to me directly on Instagram at Bria_period_whisperer and message me there with a screenshot of your review. As a thank you, I will give you a customized free hormone audit to get you on your way to the best health of your life in midlife.